Hey, yo, what is a cypher?
People don't care about getting their fans on the records. You know, certain people was whack.
The knowledge of the cypher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cypher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cypher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cypher, a weekly podcast where we bring you conversations with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 145, a talk with Rusty Jux. Rusty is an affiliate of the Bootcamp Clique, the long-running underground rap powerhouse collective. His work solo and with producers like Marco Polo, VS The Best, and Kayo Itachi has helped to keep BCC's rough, powerful, and smart aesthetic alive and vital. Rusty also served for years as onstage foil to one of BCC's key members, the late Sean Price. Rusty toured with him all over the world and had a bird's-eye view of Sean's memorable and often unpredictable performances. Rusty has two new projects, Meteorite with the producer Kayo Itachi and Death by Stereo with the Beat Bruisers and Pause One. We met up with him at Crosstown Studios in Harlem. If you enjoyed The Cypher, make sure you subscribe to it on your podcast app of choice. That way, you'll get every episode as soon as it comes out. You'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should check out our unforgettable sit-down with Sean Price on episode 23. Speaking of our archive, if you want us to add to it by making new episodes, visit patreon.com/thecyphershow and become a patron. You can find more information about this episode, including a list of the songs we play, at thecyphershow.com. While you're there, make sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter to keep track of everything that's going on with us. And now, here's the only man to ever get Ill Bill to stop cursing, Rusty Jux. I read somewhere you started out putting out music even before the stuff I heard, circa like 98 or whatever. You did some stuff as a teenager, some singles here and there. Were you rapping under the same name?
Yeah, I was. When I first came out with, putting music out, my first singles, it was Rusty Jux. It used to be Vic Funkster.
Vic Funkster.
That was way, way back. But, you know, yeah.
That was great. What were those early things like? I tried to find them and couldn't.
I don't even remember the names of the singles, man. But it was a minute ago. But I was when I started recording when I was like 13, 14, my next door neighbor had a studio. He was my man Zoe, he rest in peace. And I used to record there, and then I started, you know, recording other producers and other, like, home studios and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, I just started putting singles out. And I had a manager at one point when I was, like, 17, 18. And he was Rock's cousin.
Rock is the stage name of rapper Jamal Bush, who also goes by the name of Rock Ness Monsta. Rock and Sean Price, a.k.a. Ruck, are, of course, the two members of Helta Skelta, as well as members of the New York supergroup Bootcamp Clique, with Smith & Wesson, OGC, and episode 24 guest Buckshot. After first appearing on Smith & Wesson's 1995 album, The Shinin', Helta Skelta released their debut, Nocturnal, in 1996 and its follow-up, Magnum Force, in 1998. Rusty guested on two tracks on Magnum Force, the title track and the posse cut, Gang's All Here.
My militant mind's impervious to sufficient, maintaining the rank glorious in this division. Killer call telling MFC in collision, the scene could get bloody, two teams with one mission.
Eventually, Helta Skelta released Dirt in 2008. Sean Price, who visited The Cypher in episode 23, passed away in April 2015.
And so he introduced me to Sean P. Mm-hmm. Well, he brought Sean P to my block one day, and he came through on the passenger side with his foot out the window. And, you know what I mean? And, you know, we clicked ever since then. You know, he heard me rhyme, and then that was it. I got on the Magnum Force album, the second album.
Right.
And, you know, that's when I, you know, started doing all the ill collabs with Bootcamp.
Right, and that was like circa 98. Yeah. Somewhere in there, you were going to work with DR Period?
Daryl DR Period Pittman is a veteran producer who has worked with Jay-Z, M.O.P., Cam'ron, Busta Rhymes, Freeway, AZ, and many more. Some of his best-known songs are M.O.P.'s anthem Anti Up, Cam'ron's Hey Ma, and Public Enemy's He Got Game.
I think that was a little, that was after I started doing joints with Ruck, I think. Yeah, but you know, it didn't work out. And no hard feelings and everything, but we did a lot of joints, and I just felt like at that time, I felt like it was moving too slow for me, you know, and I wanted to put something out, and I was like, come on, man, like, you know, but me and DR is cool, though.
I mean, that's always an issue in the business.
Yeah, it was with Select Records we were supposed to drop.
Oh, okay. So, you know, they did the songs with Magnum Force, and then, but from there, it took like 10 years for a solo album to come out.
Right.
What was going on in that time? Why did it take so long?
I had put two mixtapes out, and I was doing a lot of singles. I was doing the single thing, like with different people, different projects. And I actually had like two other deals. Well, one of them was the DR Period joint, and I had another deal after that, and both of them didn't work out. So I was supposed to drop about two albums, you know, in that time.
Right.
And I had two mixtapes, but you know, it didn't work out. So I ended up on my mixtape, I used some of the joints that was going to be on my album on my first Reign of Destruction mixtape in 2006.
Yeah. Money make the world spin, like I'm caught up in the whirlwind. Solid gold, diamond, and pearl rims. The ends gotta justify the means, and I means to stack my cream by any and all means, even if it...
Right, and then you had a mixtape that came out right before Indestructible, right?
Yeah, that was Slick Vic the Ruler.
Hey yo, I guzzled that Hennessy. Ha! Like it's the only thing that stands in between me and total supremacy. Murder one tendency. And I can't control my wolves from ripping niggas apart in the industry. All I got is...
And then I dropped Indestructible.
Right.
2008.
Yeah. In 2000, one of the first things other than the stuff with Helter Skelter was a song you did with the East Flatbush Project. Actually, I think the song was actually called Rusty Jukes.
I want you watch right now. Rusty Jukes, and I'm known to pull foul. BK Stomping Grounds is my home. Anywhere I roam, I'm repping full blown. See, I don't rock ice.
I forgot how I met Spencer, but me and him was working together for a while. I was going up to the radio, different shows with him. We went to Atlanta. I was performing in Ohio. I performed out there. And we just, you know, he was a dope producer. He thought I was a dope artist. And we did about three singles and put them out on vinyl. You know, I haven't spoken to him in a while.
And Fall Back is another early song.
Yeah.
That one has the Sesame Street theme in it.
One, two, check it out. Quick 36 bar hit. Plus the hook. East Coast got a star pick. Rusty Jukes, write a rhyme tighter, shine brighter. 50 burner, 20 blazer, Tyson dime lighter.
Yeah, that was Duck Down hooked that up. I forget the producer who did that joint, and but it was dope, man. And I was happy to get that opportunity too, because I had dropped the single "Live the Life" previous to that on the Duck Down Presents compilation.
But yo, I can see clearly now that the rain is gone. See the Pharaoh Dawn brain is strong, now he train is long. Interpreting entertainers form to explain his song to the non-population operation bangathon.
And then they put that on the B-side to that joint. You know, that was like the second time I got paid for a song. You know, the first song was Live the Life. And he was like, $1,500, cool? I was like, $1,500 to myself, like, what? And then I got, I think, the same thing for Fall Back. So I was hype about that at the time.
Yeah, definitely. Indestructible, how you rap on it is like, it's different than your other projects. It's
right.
Like, from what I can hear, it's like it's fast, your flow is a little faster, a little wordier than the stuff that would come after.
Right.
You stay strapped with a Mac in the back of the act. Now I'm back in the lack with an eagle and a hawk black. Uzi and a pump being crazy when I dump in the break a nigga back. Push the shit back when it can't.
Why?
Well, I think with Indestructible, I was trying to show the world that I was really versatile, because before that, I was known for being on a lot of different, you know, what a Duck Down compilations and Helter Skelter albums, and I was just really known for spitting hardcore, and you know, that was it. So I wanted to be, you know, show that I could rhyme this way, you know, because I was doing that before with, you know, my albums, and so I really wanted to, you know, show my versatility.
Okay. And, you know, on that album, we were talking just before, you had your son, Lil Vic.
Yeah, yeah.
Do a hook on that.
When I say Busty, you scream Chucks. Busty, Chucks. Vic bringing the hook.
When I'm on stage spitting that fire.
Get up.
Burning it down, taking you high.
Get up.
I want to see you wild out. Everybody get up. Get up. Everybody get up.
Was that the first time he'd recorded? Like, what was that like to get him to do that?
Yeah, it was dope because he was always coming in the studio with me because I was a single father. That's kind of rare. Like, my son lived with me since he was 3-4 years old. So, and he was he's always with me everywhere because I didn't leave. He didn't want to stay at my mom's. I was living with my mother, and so he was always at the studio with me doing everything. So that when I came to record that song, I wrote that hook on the train. I was finished writing the verse and the hook on the train. And I just told him that, you know, in the booth, I'm like, yo, just say it like this. And he got it real quick. And I was like, yeah, because, you know, he used to saying songs and everything. He got it quick and it came out perfect.
Nice. Has he kept up with rhyming at all?
Yeah, everybody asks me that all the time. He started, but then he's not really serious with it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I ain't trying to force it on him. You know, sure. So I just let him do his thing. And he loves being on the road with me. He's my hype man. He's my hype man for a long time. And, you know, he enjoys traveling with me and, you know, experiencing different stuff like that. But my 8-year-old, actually, he's rhyming. And he's on some like conscious rap. Like he likes to rhyme about, you know, everything that's going on. You know what I'm saying? And that's crazy to me. I'm like, wow. You know, he started rhyming. His coach heard that he rapped, and he asked him to make the song for the team because he's on the football team, the Bronx Knights. So, and he made the song for the team. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy.
Nice. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of traveling and stuff, I saw some video footage from, I think it must have been 2010, of you and Torre overseas.
Dumbdown Records represent the boom back.
Yeah.
With I think it was both Marco of you Polo. Doing sets because you both had collab albums with Marco Polo at that time.
Yeah, it was called the Double Execution album because Marco had the Double Barrel album before the Execution, and then, you know, we all went on tour with that, and that was a great tour, man. Like, Marco is not only a dope producer, man. He put everything together, man. He set up the show, you know what I'm saying? And he the one that set up all the connected with all the promoters, and we got out there. We had a great show. We had a great time, and it was crazy, man.
Was that your first time in Europe, or?
No, I've been in Europe a few times before that with Sean, but that was my first time. Like, you know, I was with Marco and Torre, but it was my first time by myself out there like that. So. That was dope.
Nice.
John took me everywhere all over Europe. And out of state.
You were his hype man for a long time.
Yeah. And you know what was dope about that was that he didn't tell me, yo, you going out there with me as a hype man. I had so many songs with him that in the set I would do like 6 or 7 songs that we did together. So it didn't feel like I was hype man for him. And then he let me rock for like 15 minutes. With like 3, 4, 5 joints, you know, my solo joint.
In the middle of the set.
Right. So, yeah. You know, it was love, man.
That's great.
I appreciated that, for real. And then, you know what? That helped me be a better performer and everything, man. It really trained me. You know what I'm saying? I see how he dealt with promoters, how he performed, and it made me way better, man.
Yeah.
And it built my fan base at the same time, because people will remember me to today. Like, oh, I remember you was with Sean here and here. I met you here. Signing autographs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was such an interesting.
Set me up.
He was such an interesting performer, right? He would a lot of times just kind of like grab the mic stand, and hold on to it and rap, and somehow
just get busy.
It was something that wouldn't work for 99% of
Man,
people.
Sean never had a show set up. Like, he'd never be like, "We're gonna do this on this song and say this at this part." He didn't care about none of that. He just was. You know, I don't give a F about everything. And it always worked out, though. Crazy. Like, I remember he told me he performed. He was like, yo, he did a song called Psycho. And then he was like, He was like, hold up, stop the music. And he was like, I'm going to do it now. I'm going to do it blindfolded. And then he rhymed again and they went crazy. I'm like, like that did something. You know what I mean? Like only Sean would think of something like that. He did it blindfolded and they went crazy. And I'm like, wow, this is, yo, he was amazing, man.
That's incredible.
It's crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. So what do you try to bring to your performances now that you kind of learned from him?
I really, and I interact with the people a lot. Like Sean always after performance, you know, like sometimes on stage he'll be kind of rude with him. Like people would shout out, "Oh, Monkey Bars," and he'd be like, "Shut the fuck up!" Like I don't take requests, you know. But and people were good. The person he screamed at, I love it. Like, "Oh, Sean!" But you know, after the show, he always was building with everybody, you know, and signing up, taking pictures, and that's what I do too. I definitely do that every show.
Yeah. So you did, of course, you did a tribute song to him, the Universal right. Sean song that you did with Rock.
And Stuck B, his brother, too.
Oh, right. Who's in the video, of course, who looks eerily like him.
Yeah. Everybody said that.
How was it to write that song? I know even in the second verse, you even like did some rhymes in his style.
Yeah, I tried to, you know, I got into my Sean P mode. Like, what would he say on this track?
Sean Man's murder, Alcatraz, fuck your ass, Arthur ass, serve ya. Nigga, my shoe game spiritual. Jesus Christ came to bless the world with the lyrical. S-E-A-N-P with a capital. Big gun on the shooting spree through your capital.
It was the last, that was the last song that I wrote for Media Right because, you know, of course I wasn't, that was unexpected. I was just going to, you know, keep doing it with the theme. So that's why I titled it Universal Sean. And, it was hard writing it. And then when Kayo sent the beat, he didn't send the beat like, do this one for, you know, for a Sean P joint.
It was just beat.
Just when I heard it, I was like, this got to be, you know, the song that I do for Sean. And,
right.
And it just came out like that. And it was great, man. I think I'm really good with those type of songs. Like, especially when my sister passed in 2007, when I dropped the Indestructible album, I have a song called Blaze My Fire, and I put that was the last song, and that song was crazy.
Beauty was her name, Blaze was a flame, supernova queen in a physical frame. Since May 23rd, 1985 through the April 9th, 07, date of her demise, she left behind the daughter.
And then a verse that I did on the Boot Camp album, I forget the name of that song, on the Casualties of War album, I think. I did another verse for her.
Here I am, last stand, in my hand is my girl. We
Blaze,
so
I miss
thorough.
You. Always love you, never forget you. Wish I was with you. Smoke a spliff to your memory. Anybody fuck with you was my enemy.
When I get deep in, you know, into thought, you know what I mean? It's crazy.
What about the video for that too? I should note, by the way, for our listeners, that you're wearing a Sean P hat.
Yeah,
and an
I had
incredible
to come,
medallion.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so one of the fans made the medallion from a picture. And he sent it to me. I wear this a lot. And the video was shot by Double Rush. They're from France and everything. And they're friends with Kayo Itachi. And they offered to shoot it for free. And I was like, yeah, let's do it, man. And they came out. I mean, they was out in New York for a while. And then we set it up when we wanted to do it. And it came out great, man. And I just had everybody there. Everybody that could make it and everything, you know, and Bernadette was there and Little Sean Price, and it was great, man.
Yeah, it's
and
a very...
somebody, this guy, Mirrors One, it's crazy how they did the mural right on my block. Like, I'm from Kingston and Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
Kingston Ave between Bergen and St. Mark's, and they did a mural on Bergen between Kingston and Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? Like, right there. And they could have had it in Brownsville, you know, where he's from. But it was crazy how it was meant for it to be right there.
Yeah.
So I shot it on the corner by the corner store and in front of the mural. And he did it so good, man. It's really, you know, some people did stuff and it don't really look like him, but that one was perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, when we had Sky Zoo on, we asked him about, you know, his experience around this. And I thought for you, it'd be interesting to note as well. Where were you when you heard he passed?
Where was I when my wife just came home from work. She works nights. And she came, it was like 9 or 10 in the morning. And I was asleep. I was just getting up, as a matter of fact. I wasn't even woke like that. I said hi to her when she came in. And she always gets on her phone and she's on the internet or whatever, like Instagram, stuff like that. And then so she was on Facebook and she came across Bernadette's post about, you know, my husband passed in my bed. And she was like, Victor, like, yo, I think she talking about Sean. And she started telling me, and I was like, what? Like, and then it wasn't clicking. I was like, oh, hell no, what the hell? Because he wasn't sick, nothing, you know? And it was just crazy to me, man. And then immediately after that, I called her because I know it couldn't have been, you know, a mistake or a joke or nothing like that. And I called her, and when her sister picked up the phone, I knew it was something wrong. I knew it was true. And she was like, hi, Rusty. And she was like, yeah. Then I could hear her crying in the back. And oh, man. And then I started crying. It was crazy. Man. I was like, damn.
Incredible. And, you know, moving from Sean to kind of the wider boot camp family, it's so rare to have a crew that A, lasts that long, and B,
right,
you know,
right.
With
we
so,
just had
so
to duck down
lineup
20.
Changes. Yeah. What can you talk a little bit about kind of the dynamics within the boot camp family?
Yo, man, I was always a fan of boot camp before I met Sean, before I met any of them. So when I started collabing with them, it was like amazing. Like the first 3 years, I'm just like, oh. Even when I do shows with them now, it's still dope, man. I'll be singing along with all the songs. And that's my family, man. That's my brothers, man. All my big brothers, you know, they all a few years older than me. And I learned from a lot of them with performing. Like me and Steel is real close. And me, Steel and Rock and Sean, and I'm close with all of them, but you know, I got more, you know, personal history with Steel and Rock. And but it's crazy, man. And they're a great group, man. And you know, they respect it all over, man. And I'm glad to be a part of their history too. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And, you know, the Universal Sean song appeared on your album Meteorite.
Right.
New album. One of two new albums.
Yeah,
You've got going on right now. For that album, you know, to go along with the title and the theme, you work in, like, outer space stuff into literally every song.
Strike the earth like a meteorite. Split from an asteroid. Broke niggas mad because they had for it. We shine brighter than a constellation. Without limitation, I took a trip to the red planet. There was a dust storm. I had my Carhartt's champion and chucks on. The atmosphere was too thin. Plus, primarily carbon dioxide was all I was breathing in. This world was
all the titles, all the metaphors,
yeah,
all the
meteorite, constellation, yeah. Cosmic dust.
Yeah, was that tough to keep going so consistently through an album's worth of tunes?
Nah, it was good. We were supposed to be doing a EP. And then I was like, man, we might as well do the whole album. And I just went with it, man. And this one, I tried not to curse too much. And people don't even notice. Like, you know, I'm just still, you know, coming with the hard body, the delivery and the rhymes. And so you don't really notice. Like my VIC album, I didn't curse at all.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
That was a clean album. No samples, no curses. Even all the features that I asked. And they was like, what? Like, you don't want me to curse? And they killed it. You know what I mean? I had Terminology, Guilty Simpson, Ill Bill, Planet Asia. You know what I mean? A lot of dope artists, and they sent their clean verses, and it was crazy. You know, so this it wasn't hard for me to do the Meteorite like how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just was, you know, I was on the internet reading about certain things, and then I incorporated into the rhyme, you know, like the black hole.
I was going to ask about that, too,
like
because
I rhymed
that's,
like I was
that's
a black hole
deep.
In space.
Black hole.
Yeah, so I read about it and, you know, it came together good, man.
Yeah, that seemed in particular seemed like a fun one. Like, so you really did research about black holes.
Yep.
Nice. And about the clean thing, about the not cursing thing, where did that come from? Why decide to do that?
I guess because I just want to show, like, you don't have to be, you know, brother, it don't have to be, like, about all about profanity and shooting and killing and everything. I wanted, because I'm slowly transitioning to my next album is going to be real conscious, and I'm going to be talking about, you know, everything, all the times, everything we're going through. And I think that's what I was put here to do, really. You know, like I could do the hardcore stuff, but, you know, an artist, you're really supposed to reflect on the times, and that's what I'm going to do in my next one.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get my fans, you know, ready for it. So, you know, I set it up like this now.
Interesting. And the Meteorite Records done with all one producer.
Right.
Like, I like a lot doing of your projects. Them like that.
Yeah.
Why do you like that model? Because you do that a lot.
Yeah. Ever since the first album, I was on MySpace. That was the MySpace era. And I was just hollering at producers from all over because I had my fan base built up from being on boot camp stuff. So I knew producers knew about me and I had producers from Switzerland, France, you know, different places. And they all sent me beats and I put it together. But then when I met Marco, I wanted to do the whole, you know, I loved Eric being Rakim or Coogi rapping Polo, like, you know, different. I love that. I came from that era, so I love to do that type of joint. And I like Gangstar. You know what I'm saying? I think their music was beautiful like that. It was just them two. So I tried to keep my albums going like that. And so all of them has been like that. Like VIC was the archetype. Adamantine was Endemic. He's from the UK. Archetype's from Boston. Marco's from Toronto. Kayo Itachi's from France. And my Ready to Jux album with VS the Best from Philly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I just kept it like that.
You give co-billing to almost all these producers on the front cover and the name right. of the project. Why is that important to do?
Because everybody, like, just like you know about Rusty Jux and you may not know about the archetype, he's still an ill producer. You know what I'm saying? And we did that album together. It wasn't just like it was Rusty Jux's album and he just gave me some beats. You know what I'm saying? So I had to put everybody's name up there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And the Adamantine record, the way you're spitting on there is like different. I feel like you're not even the type of stuff you're saying, but the sound of your voice, your delivery is like more aggressive
right.
than the previous stuff and even than stuff that comes after that.
I don't know how y'all niggas got paid to rhyme. Should have killed yourself to save some time. Take a long walk on a short pier. Now you're dealing with guerrilla warfare.
Was that like a conscious thing? What was behind that?
Nah, I think I was working on Adamantine and the Execution at the same time. And I think I was, I did Adamantine first, but the Execution came out first. I was just on that. I think after you know why? Because the first album, I was all over the place. Like I was telling you, trying to show my versatility. And then everybody was saying, I seen a lot of critics and people saying, yo, you know, they wanted Indestructible to be more hardcore. And so the second album, I wanted to be hard. So that's why I just went straight through. That's why I titled it The Execution and Adamantine. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing harder
literally
than Adamantium.
The hardest
like,
things, yeah.
So that's why I was on that zone. So then, you know, that's why it came out like that.
Mm-hmm. Seems like you're a big comic book fan with
right.
Adamantine. And then you shout out on songs, you know, Black Panther and the Avengers and stuff like that.
You can't hold. Niggas can't kill me. Black Panther Avenger, you feel me? Back blocks with them crooks get crooked. SWATs came through when my niggas had to book it. Stomp niggas.
What are your favorite comics?
Well, I used to be a big Spider-Man fan and Wolverine, Silver Surfer. I used to be into a lot of that. Well, my friends used to be big comic book fans, like more than me. They know about more than me, but I was just, I used to go see a psychiatrist when I was in elementary school, and I used to get they used to give me money for car fare to come back from, you know, from the hospital or whatever and everything, because, you know, I was acting up in school. They had to send me there or whatever, and I used to take the money for the car fare, and it was a comic book store across the street, and I used to, you know, get comic books and walk all the way home. I mean, like, it was far, like, and you know, so I used to love it, man. And I couldn't wait till the next week for the next, you know, what happened next.
Yeah.
You know, I used to even buy the What If comics. Like, what if Conan fought Wolverine? And, you know, they not even the same time. Like, so, you know, I just, that was my thing at the time. Baseball cards and comic books.
Nice. And, you know, probably my favorite album of yours is the Ready to Jux, a kind of like tribute to reimagining of Ready to Die.
Early 90s with Biggie and change the title a little bit and just come with my point of view on it, the type of song.
Fuck the world, fuck my moms and my girl. My life is played out like a jerry curl. I'm ready to die.
Ready to die any second now. Who wanna come with me? Got some bloodthirsty cutthroats running with me. Beast on patrol, trying to lock a nigga up again, but I ain't going back. They ain't knowing what they up against. At the end of my road.
That album concept was VS the best idea, and I just rolled with it, and it came out dope, man.
Interesting. Why that album in particular? Why Ready to Die in particular? As a record to kind of serve as the centerpiece of your album.
Because that was his intro to the world, and that was, you know, I just wanted to do that one. I didn't want to do the Life After Death, so I just and Ready to Juke sound better, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it sounded dope. I mean, you know, to go with the Ready to Die, so I just did that.
Nice. When did you first hear Biggie? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember. I was about I think 15 or 16, something like that. I remember. I think the first song that I heard was R&B, Dreams of R&B.
When I bust my nuts, I bust them one by one. So what's the 411, hun, Dreams of fucking an R&B bitch. I'm just playing what I'm saying. Dreams of fucking...
I remember it was a sticker at that time that I used to see a lot of places, and it was just a picture of... They didn't have his face. It was just a big body with his arm up or something like that. And I never knew what he looked like, and I was already into his music. Like, yo, it was R&B and Dreams of an R&B and another song. The one that was on the soundtrack to Who's the Man?
Oh, Party and Bullshit.
Bucking and bucking at niggas like I was duck hunting, coming out just me and my crew, 'cause all we wanna do is.
Yeah, Party and Bullshit. That was my first joints. And then when he came out with when Juicy, the video, that's when I first seen him. And I was like, yo, you know, that was crazy.
Amazing. Did you ever meet him or?
No. I never met him. I remember one time he was in a car and he pulled up on my block. And he had sent somebody in because there used to be two weed spots on my block. One straight across the street from me and another one on the side. And he sent somebody in there to get something. And while he was in there in the car, it was dudes from my building getting ready to trying to go rob him. And but, you know, it didn't happen because he pulled off. I mean, not that he knew about it, but, you know, right. It was slow on it and good thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And I remember the older dudes was talking about, yo, that's Biggie over there. And they wanted to go over there. They always trying to get it. Old Dirty Bastard got shot on my block.
That's where that happened.
Yeah, he was dealing with my homegirl. He was out there talking to it was a group called Brooklyn Zoo on my block. And so at first they was at odds, you know, because he's at Brooklyn Zoo and they was Brooklyn Zoo. And I knew about them first with Brooklyn Zoo. But anyway, they was talking and everything was squashed. And some guys from around my way tried to rob all of them or whatever. And he ran and they caught him, shot him or something like that. I was like, damn.
Jesus. on the Ready to Juke album, you know, you have that Ain't Like It Used to Be song that kind of like, you know, gloss on Things Done Changed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that was another one I was talking about real life. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned it in, you know, as kind of like on, you know, on Biggie's version, he mentions his mother having cancer.
Right, right.
And you mentioned your mother having HIV.
Right.
My mama got cancer in her breast. Don't ask me why I'm motherfucking stressed. Things done.
Death, so stressed, so I cherish the ones I have left. Like my mom's, the HIV is no joke. Since I moved out, it really been harder for her to cope. Plus she
What is it like to write, you know, personal stuff about like that, about your mother, about your sister?
Yeah.
Like, how did they react? Is it tough for you to
write?
My
mother was like, what, you put that in the song? And I was like, Ma, I got to... You know, I never spoke about it before in any other thing, so that was the first time I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And but she understood after a while. She just was like shocked that I did it, that I said it. And she had that since I was like, it's been a long time that she had that since I was like 12 or something like that. And my aunt had it, and she passed away. Well, she passed away from pancreas cancer, but she had. She had AIDS, and one of my uncles, because my mother has there's eight of them, and one of my uncles passed from AIDS too, my Uncle Randy. And so it's really, you know, my family really knows about that, like, serious. So I had to speak on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was something that I deal with, and, you know, my mother's been dealing with, so I had to talk about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted stylistically, I wanted to ask about something. You have, you know, on the song Something Out of Hopeless, right?
Right.
You call yourself an MC's MC.
Right.
Still praise for the sound I created. See, I'm an MC's MC. I put it in the ER with an MD. Or sometimes in the mold. Ain't nobody tell them disrespect me in the vlog.
So for people who aren't rappers, what does that mean? Like, what kind of, like...
Like, because I know... I know a lot of dope artists and some ill artists, man, and they love how I rap, you know, because I'm not a rapper that goes along with the trends, you know what I'm saying? I come from the heart and I speak from, you know, from the era that I come from, and a lot of rappers appreciate it, man, and I appreciate them appreciating, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why I said that. Right. There's a lot of artists that I grew up listening to that I'm cool with now, you know, like Sadat or, you know, a lot of different artists. And they tell me, yo, you know, like they love my style, and it's dope to me.
Nice. You know, I wanted to ask about your new projects. Obviously, you have Meteorite.
Yeah.
You also have a record you did with Beat Bruisers.
Right. Yeah, man. I got linked up with them through my man Josh. And how that happened was I did a feature with them. It was called... Un-F-Wittable.
You can't fuck with me. Shooks 100 proof, 21 guns salute. I ain't never made a truce. In the streets, I'm the truth. Smoke Kush wrapped in the Dutch mask. Fifth grade, I was in the back crushing grass.
Yeah. That came out so dope, man. And I had never met them. And they told me they wanted to do a video. So I shot my part in New York and sent it to them. And the video still came out dope. It was crazy. And then after that, they told me they wanted to work on an album. You know, with me, Pause One, Mando the DJ, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And you know, I just was sending them my verses, and they, you know, as soon as the project was getting ready to drop, I did some promo, and they had me and my son come out there, and my son is a big West Coast hip hop fan, so he loved J-Rock, Kendrick, Nipsey Hussle, so he was hyped about that more than coming with me to perform with me, you know. And then come to find out he couldn't perform with me because he was too young for the clubs or whatever. So he wanted to hit Roscoe's and Fat Burger and all of that stuff. And but we went out there and I did radio promo and we shot a few videos. So I'm waiting for those videos to drop. And all of them, I met them and they was all good brothers, man. And the album, I like how the album came out.
Yeah, the album has a very kind of like musically very like soulful
right.
feel to it.
Yeah.
Trying to school me, but what can a lie teach? Killing babies, teenagers, and grown men. Got cold cots in the prisons, you'll get thrown in.
Did that affect how you rapped on it at all? The stuff you talk about?
I just adapt to whatever. That's why I tell people, a lot of producers want to send me certain type of beats. Like, yo, I know this is some type of joint you'll like, but I like everything, man. I grew up on Tribe Called Quest to M.O.P. to Brand Nubian to Public Enemy, you know what I mean? I listen, if it's dope to me, it's dope.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
It could be whatever type of beat.
And you do a lot of work with people internationally, right? You had the Japanese producer
Japanese
artist.
Right, right. I'm getting ready to do a Japan
tour. Omen 44, right? The Black Sunrise project.
Yeah, we're getting ready to do the tour in April.
Oh, wow. Tell me about that.
Yeah, he's another one hit me up about features and we started working. And actually, I thought he was just going to produce it. And then when he sent me back the songs, he's rhyming.
He's rapping on it, too.
Like,
yeah.
Some volcanic creating new landscapes. Hot like the liquid rock burning your chemical soup. We go deep underground like the French rap. Okay, player, join the club. Oh, Kinder Hook, stay to play. Yeah, that was crazy. But yeah, I'm glad that worked out because I've never been nowhere near Asia. You know, I've been all over Europe, all over the States and Canada and everything. So... And now a few people hit me up from like, yo, I can't wait to see you in Osaka. And I love it, man. And so I'm ready for that tour.
Mm-hmm. And just in general, doing stuff with, you know, people from overseas, either producers, artists, whatever. What is that like? Like, how do you find them? Is it different than
they
working
find me.
With American
they just,
artists?
I always put it out there. From I remember when I first started on MySpace, just saying, you know, if you need a Rusty Jux feature, hit my email, and then it just happened. Like, they just called me up, they hit me up. I mean, you know, email me or inbox me or whatever. And I want to plug this in real quick. I got another album coming out, and I had my man Archetype mix and master it, and it's called International Jux. And the concept behind that is I'm doing all the song, every song on the album is featured with my fans. Like, no other rapper has done that. Like, people don't care about getting their fans on the record. It's, you know, certain people was whack. And I got people rhyming in their language. Like, I got rappers, two on one song, I got two rappers from Africa. One from Kenya, one from Senegal. Another song with 34 Click from France. They rhyming in French. Switzerland rappers, Denmark rappers, rapper from Mexico. And I got them all mixed up, you know, all over the album. Even the producers is from certain places, you know? So every song, everybody is getting their shine. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's name's on it. You know, whoever produced it, whoever's rapping, and it came together crazy, man. It's just International Jux.
That's great. And I noticed that, you know, in your lyrics, you definitely quote or reference a lot of, like, kind of golden age, like late 80s, early 90s artists, people like KRS, EPMD, stuff like that.
See how it sound? A little unrational. A lot of MCs like to use the word dramatical.
Your friends guess are very unrational. A lot of suckers like to use the word dramatical to make them sound radical.
Break. Due to the fact they whacking their track, have to go back and stack because they lack the ingredients.
To the Mac, I'm strapped, ready to clap, react, stop running your yap and run your stack.
Who are some of your favorites from that era?
Well, in the 80s, it was definitely KRS, Big Daddy Kane, Kool G Rap, Rakim. Rakim was like, oh man, Kane and Rakim was my, you know, my idols at that time. In the 90s, it was, you know, a bunch of rap, like Redman, Wu-Tang, M.O.P., a lot of artists, man.
And, you know, an artist not that many people know about is Killer Shah, who you,
right,
you shout out.
Yeah, I had a feature with him, and I never met him, but I always dig his music. Mm-hmm. And so I had to give him that shout out on that No Prince record for R.A.
Yeah, rest in peace, Killer Shah. Watch you back in the streets, do or die.
Queens MC Killer Shah was a one-time partner of Tragedy Gaddafi and a member of Juice Crew affiliates The Super Kids. He passed away in January 2010 due to complications from diabetes.
And so you have two and I guess three album, you know,
well, more
two
than
new
that,
albums.
I got more albums, but I won't get into everything. But I got a few other albums done.
Wow.
Ready, yeah. A few more.
Is there any tidbits about any of them you can let out?
Well, I have one with a producer named Bill Blagan from Minneapolis, and me and him did a whole album, and that's gonna be different for everybody because the beats is like a bouncy type of like you know, rhyming like that, and I went along with, you know, with his style on that, and I have another album with a producer from Canada, another Canadian producer called The Last Composer,
mm-hmm.
and just another producer. We got 10 songs from, he's from Vienna, Austria. He's from Austria. And I'm just working all over, man.
Wow. And other than the Japanese tour you talked about, any show plans?
Well, I got, I'm going on tour with King Magnetic and on his Mag Mob tour. And I'm not going to do the whole thing, but I'm doing a lot of shows with him. And then I'm going to come back home and go straight to the to Japan for that tour. And yeah, so me and King Magnetic, we're gonna be Phoenix, Arizona, California, a lot of different places.
Nice. And when you perform, is the reaction any different, like overseas as opposed to in the US? I feel like I've definitely had a lot of artists, man, tell me like, oh, Europe is the best.
Yeah, Europe is the best, man. I love it out here too, man. But it's just, I don't know. It's just like, that's where my fan base is the largest, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really, like, France is, it's crazy in France. But I can't wait to get to Africa, too, because a lot of people keep hitting me about Africa shows and African artists, too. And but, you know, Europe is dope, man. I want to get everywhere. I definitely want to hit Africa, too. I was thinking about doing I find a dope African producer from out there and I do a whole one with him. So then that'd be a crazy run there.
Yeah. Awesome. And, you know, I think the producer that a lot of fans really loved you working with was Marco, obviously.
They always tell me, yo, do another album all the time.
What was it about his beats that you liked that made you want to do a record with him?
Well, Marco, he has that sound like from the like that golden era sound, man. And when I came over with him to do a verse on one of his on his Port Authority album, and I think it was Port Authority Part Two. And when I came to do that, then I asked him, you know, give me some beats for an album. I was gonna work on an album, and I didn't plan on just doing it with just him. And then I was like, damn, when I came back with like the four joints, yeah, it gave me like four or five songs. And then we was like, let's do this album. It was perfect, man.
And not only that, you did a baker's dozen worth of freestyles on top of it.
I said, fresh out the underground, straight to the majors. Still put you underground, blicking with them gauges. More money, more murder, more problems for pussy. Shots fired, you landing on your tushy. Greasy, ice.
Let's promote it by me rhyming on your Port Authority beats, you know, and then we shot all of the videos in one day in one spot in Queens, and that definitely helped it out, man. That was memorable right there.
Yeah.
That definitely helped it out. So it was 13 freestyles, and so we had 13 days before the album, every day another part dropped, you know, back to back. It was directed by Mills Murder, and Mills Murder, and it was dope.
And you know, I do have to ask about your probably most common nickname you use for yourself, Vic Flair.
Woo! Woo! Yeah. You can catch the hate your boy Vic Flair floating in an Aero Vet. 26 inch Giovanni's or that 07 Jaguar XK Pharaoh set.
Big wrestling fan.
Yeah, I definitely was, man. I was a Hulkamaniac forever. Definitely. And Ric Flair, that was just, you know, I was a Ric Flair fan too, but I was more into Hulk Hogan, but you know, my name is Vic, so that fit better, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I had to do that and I go with that one because I forgot who produced it. It was like that Scooby-Doo track. And that was one of my biggest joints. Like anytime, I think I might do that when I do the South by Southwest. And Vic Flair song, it was never on any project. It was supposed to be on Indestructible, but that's one of my biggest joints.
Right. That was one even the radio took up, right?
Yeah. They played it on Hot 97 too. And they loved that song. So I just performed that everywhere.
And so what's going on at South by?
It's March 17th. And it's crazy because that's Sean P's birthday. And St. Patrick's Day. And so I'm going to go up there and tear it down. And I'm going to end it off with Universal Sean. You know, and Duck Down is going to be out there as well. And they're doing a tribute for Sean. And so, I'm going to definitely be there for that. Whatever they need me to do. And I can't wait, man. It's crazy how that show was set up on. And then I got another show on April 9th. And that's the day my sister passed away. You know, so I'm doing one on the day my sister passed and one on Sean's birthday. It was just meant to be.
And you mentioned, you know, speaking of your sister, you mentioned in one of the songs about her that you found out about her passing while you were on the road.
Now it's not, it really never hit me, so everywhere I go, I feel like you're right there with me. I miss my sister more every morning that I wake, especially when I'm rocking shows touring out of state. I was on the road with Sean Price and Vinny Paz when I got the news that my little sister passed away. My stomach boiled up in knots. Tears started flowing, then I felt my heart drop.
What was that?
Yeah,
like?
I was with Sean Price on tour with Vinny Paz. It was Vinny Paz Jedi Mind Tricks tour, and we was in Colorado. I don't know if he was in Denver or whatever. And I spoke to her. I seen him in the hospital before I left. And when I was sitting there, we was at eating somewhere. It was, you know, we had a show that night or whatever. And we was eating. I finished eating. And then I got the call. And it was her boyfriend at the time. And he's telling me, we lost her. He was like, you didn't hear? And I'm like, what? And, you know, I just went outside. I remember sitting on, like, the side of the road. It was a big highway. I was sitting there crying, like, bawling, like, damn. And Sean, he was standing behind me. He wasn't saying nothing to me. He just, grabbed my you know, my shoulder or whatever, and then he was like, come on, let's go. And I went into the hotel room. And I think I left, like, I performed that night, and then I drew Drew High got a plane ticket for me to come back home.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
you know, I didn't finish that tour out, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you left that tour early.
Yeah, as soon as I heard. I performed that night, and then the next day I was out.
Wow. And, you know, Vinny has been a guest on the show before. We've had him come through.
Vinny is amazing.
Yeah. And he and Sean have something in common. They both seem to be pretty big personalities.
Yeah. When we first started the tour, I just met him. I mean, I haven't met him yet. I seen him. We was in a room. It was a bunch of rappers or whatever backstage. And I was laughing about somebody getting thrown out or something like that. Somebody got beat up or something like, you know. And so I don't know how he got it mixed up, but he thought I was talking about him. And so he said something like, he was like, what? Like, this is my joint or some shit. I didn't even, you know, get upset or anything. I was like kind of smiling, and I was like, yo, man, I'm Rusty Jux. I was like, I wasn't talking about you. I was like, I'm Rusty Jux. And he like, oh. And then he realized, and he was like, yo, my bad. And he like apologized a little later. And I'm like, yo, don't even worry about it, man. And me and Vinny was real cool ever since that. Him and you know, all his people and everything. And that tour was great.
Yeah, I was saying, what was it like being out on the road with two kind of outsized guys like that?
Yeah, man, it was a great learning experience. And I appreciated everything, man. We became, you know, I got him on my Hard Body Hip Hop album on a song called Three the Hard Way.
I look, you can't know peace without knowing the bomb. And you can't know a law without knowing Shaitan. Anybody fuck with Jux getting grazed in the arm. Cause the calico submachine stay in the palm. 38 under the seat.
It's me, him, and Rock. He killed it. And, you know, we don't see each other a lot. You know, I speak to him online, stuff like that. But, you know, it's just the same as Ill Bill when I was on tour with Ill Bill and Sean. So now we just click, you know. So it was great to meet those dudes.
Yeah. And, you know, you've obviously, you know, you've known him for a long time now. But you've done a lot of songs with Rock, who, you know, doesn't do a ton of collaborations.
Right.
Why do you think you've been able to work with him where, like, a lot of people haven't?
Well, that's my brother, man. Anytime I called him and asked him to get on something, he didn't take too long. He always came through, and he always killed it. You know, like on the Execution album with him and Freddie Fox. Any of my albums, you know, just like the Hard Body Hip Hop album and on Universal Sean.
He came to the J's with his chain, yapped him. Then this man hit me, said he paid for it back.
In the days when we was kids, we used to act like we was older. Now niggas act like little kids and be grown up.
Some was a lot of niggas' best friends.
Word.
And you two niggas had the same work ethic. Rusty was the only nigga who worked like me. Real talk.
And I wish he could have did a verse on that one too, but I wanted him to speak on that song, and he did it so perfect. I remember my wife was amazed, like, wow, like he just spoke, and it, you know, it was right on time, everything. Like, that was great, man. Rock is a real cool dude, man. I stopped smoking recently for like a month almost, and I was at a video shoot the other day, and he was there, he was shooting something too, and he was like, I told him I quit, and he was like, what? He's like, I never knew I raised a quitter. Like, so she, like, yo, that's my brother right there. Like, he's funny. Him and Sean used to always cut on me, like, you know, with the jokes all the time.
Yeah.
And but they so funny, you don't get mad. You just laugh at it. Like, cause Sean, you can't help it. Like, and if you try to keep going with him, he's gonna keep getting you. You know, Sean was that funny. He make everybody laugh at his jokes only. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's crazy.
Amazing. Anything else you want the listeners to know about you? I know you had a ton of projects in the can or you're working on, ready to go.
Yo, I just want them to know, go get that Death by Stereo album, man. We put a lot of hard work into that album. That album is crazy. You know, definitely support real hip hop. And definitely get that Media Right album, because I stepped it up like 1,000 levels. You know what I'm saying? And it's really lyrical. Kayo Itachi is one of the illest producers, not even just from France, you know, just period. And, you know what I mean? Get that Media Right album. It's crazy.
All right. Thanks for coming by, Rusty. Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thanks.
It was very cool to talk to Rusty, and not only because I got to get a close look at his Sean Price medallion. I've always been a fan of Duck Down Records and the Boot Camp Click, and more than that, I've admired the way they've allowed their artists to express themselves no matter where they want to go. As you can hear in this interview, whether it was making a full-length tribute to Biggie or an album of songs about outer space, Rusty has always stayed true to his own vision. I can't say that I knew Sean Price well, but as you know if you listened to our episode with him, he had an incredibly outsized personality that came through both in person and in his performances. Rusty's perspective, as someone who saw all of that up close, is extremely valuable. Join us next week when our guest will be the one and only Fonte Coleman. Fonte is best known for his rapping with the seminal group Little Brother, but he's also a great singer, as he's proven with his group The Foreign Exchange. We talk his whole career, from his little heard freestyle comedy album The Story of Us through his upcoming solo project. Plus, he gives away some trade secrets about how to rhyme and drops a great special ed impression. As I mentioned at the top of the show, make sure you subscribe to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app happens to be iTunes, give us a rating or a review. If you want to take an extra step and support the show, you can make a donation at patreon.com/thecyphershow. Even a couple bucks a month will go a long way. You can find us everywhere on social media at The Cypher Show. Hit us up. Let us know what you thought of this episode, ideas for future guests, anything you'd want to talk about. More information about this or any other episode, including playlists and a lot more, can be found at thecyphershow.com. And while you're there, make sure to sign up for our mailing list. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
Sean never had a show set up.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Because there used to be two weed spots on my block, one straight across the street from me and another one on the side.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Why you put that in the song?
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
And I was like, oh, hell no, what the hell?
Our intern is Aziza Hassan.
And then I'm going to come back home and go straight to Japan.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Benjamin Bray.
My next album is going to be real conscious.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Be like, nah, I can't do a joint with you.
Yeah.
You too dope.